Thank you for joining us for episode 131 of Speaking of Mysteries. I'm Nancy Clare, and our guest for today's post-Christmas, pre-New Year's podcast is Fief Sutton, whose Colorado Boulevard, the third installment of his series featuring Caleb Rush, aka Crush, was published about 2 weeks ago on December 12th, 2017. In our interview, when comparing himself to his protagonist, Crush, Fief describes himself as someone that's nerdy, thoughtful, and not very good at things. I'm going to take exception to that because Fief's a prolific writer who, in addition to his Crush novels that take place in literarily underserved regions of Southern California, such as Glendale, Pasadena, Irwindale, and the Palmdale-Lancaster area, has written From Away, a ghost story that takes place in the state of Maine, which will be published in February 2018. And he wrote the teleplay for Past Malice, one of Dana Cameron's Emma Fielding mysteries, which will air on the Hallmark Movies and Mystery Channel January 14th, 2018. Here's Fief Sutton.
Welcome back to Speaking of Mysteries and Happy Holidays. This is Nancy Clare, and our guest today is Fief Sutton, who is going to talk about his third Crush mystery, Colorado Boulevard. Welcome, Fief.
Well, hello. It's good to be with you.
Before we talk about the book Colorado Boulevard, for those who don't live in Southern California, I have to talk about the appeal of Stephanie Edwards and Bob Eubanks' commentary on the Rose Parade, which is now over. They won't be there this year. So
this is the first year without them. Yes.
I want to try to explain to people how important watching them commentate on the parade was to locals, because it's a hoot.
Well, they broadcast it on KTLA, and I don't know whether that was nationally syndicated or not, but they did the coverage of it. They've been doing it since, I think, 1982, although it seems much longer to those of us who've lived here. And they, you know, they're kind of like that aunt and uncle you have over for Christmas dinner, who are smiling and jovial, and then you slowly realize just hate each other's guts and want to kill each other. So there's all this subtext of nastiness that comes through between the smiles and all that, and it's just glorious. And so you watch the parade and see this whole psychodrama play out, and it's wonderful. And there was one year where they tried to replace Stephanie Edwards with a younger, prettier girl and have Stephanie Edwards down on the street.
I remember
That was the one year, I think, in the whole history of the Rose Parade where it rained. It rained, it poured. And so Stephanie Edwards was down there in the pouring rain at her microphone, just seething and staring daggers at Bob Edwards. And Bob Eubanks, I mean. Then she was back up at the top, and they used to do other things on local television, but through the years, that was the only time you saw them. So it was kind of a great way to welcome in the new year with bile and hatred.
Oh, absolutely. It used to be so funny because by the end of the parade, and I personally think it would have been a great plot for a mystery. Every New Year's Day, which if it happens to be a Sunday as it was last year, the parade was on the 2nd. That was for those of you who don't live in and near Pasadena. The deal was that they would never have the parade on Sunday because the church bells would spook the horses.
Yes. That was the reasoning behind that. It's still true to this day. They don't have it on Sundays.
And, I really don't know what we're going to do without them, because it was the reason to get up.
Yeah, I don't know who's replacing them, or you know, they just won't have that history of you know, psychodrama and hatred going on between them, and they'll probably just be regular folks doing the parade, but it won't be the same.
No, but you know, such is life. Okay, so let's talk about your book. Colorado Boulevard is also the main street of Pasadena. It's the title of your book, and it's the main street of Pasadena.
Yeah.
And for most of the world, it's known as the Rose Parade, or for those of a certain age, Beach Boys song.
Actually, that was Jan and Dean.
Oh, Jan and Dean, thank you.
The little old lady from Pasadena. Yeah,
thank you for the correction.
That was the Terror of Colorado Boulevard. I originally thought of calling the book The Terror of Colorado Boulevard, but I decided that would sound kind of cheesy. So I shortened it to Colorado Boulevard.
But I think the relationship that the citizens of Pasadena have with both Colorado Boulevard, the street, and the Rose Parade is interesting. And we're not getting off topic because it's at the core of the book, I think, Colorado Boulevard, the relationship that Pasadena residents have with the parade.
Well, I mean, Colorado Boulevard itself is you know, essentially unchanged from like the 20s or even before that. If you look at postcards or photographs of it, it looks just the same. Now, the stores are different, but the storefronts and the buildings are all the same. And it's sort of been the life's blood of Pasadena forever, you know, or for 100 years. And, you know, it's gone from when I first moved to Pasadena about 30 years ago, it was a rundown shell, you know, with a couple of bars and a lot of boarded up storefronts, to now being so popular you don't want to go there. You know, it's they're all the, you know, the architectural buildings on the streets. There's a Victoria's Secret. There's a, you know, all the big chain stores have outlets on there, and it's the place that people go to talk and walk and be. You know, it's still that heart of Pasadena.
But it's so trendy, and I think you're.
It's very, very trendy right now. Yeah.
And your main character, Caleb Rush, also known as Crush, has a conflicted relationship with Pasadena and its main street, which I think might reflect other longtime residents. Although he's still a young man, fortunately, so we can have stories.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, part of the reason I said it in Pasadena, aside from the fact that I lived there, was that I wanted to, you know, with the Crush books, I try and do a portrait of L.A., of the parts of L.A. that don't ordinarily get to be seen, you know, the non-Beverly Hills parts of L.A. And the first one was set in downtown L.A. mostly, and the second one was set, you know, up on Mulholland Drive and in the movie world, and this one is set in Pasadena, and I know that in the history of hard boiled fiction or not Roman noir noir type fiction, Pasadena is always the place of the old money. It's always the place. It's the place where Philip Marlowe drove to visit General Stern with the big sleep. It's the place, you know, that 77 Sunset Strip, they're always going to Pasadena to visit the old money. It sort of represents that old money. And actually, Pasadena has now kind of gone past that in a lot of ways. It's there's more to it than that. But it still has that patina of money that's older than the film money. Money that looks on the film money kind of down its nose on the film money and it was a community, you know, long before it got subsumed into L.A. So it has that kind of class to it. That sort of, you know, the Wayne Manor in the old Batman series was one of the houses on the Arroyo Seco, overlooking Pasadena. It has that feel to it, and I wanted to touch on that too.
Well, I think it's still accurate that Pasadena does represent that sort of old money and smart people. It's where Caltech is, and
JPL
is, and it's just this sort of nerdy, rich, not too Hollywood.
Although it's more so now. Although it's still very separate from Hollywood. It's still, I mean, when you live in Pasadena, everybody always acts like you live out in, you know, East Jesus. You know, they can't imagine driving that far. Even though it's only like 15 minutes from downtown, it somehow has the aura of being a faraway place.
Well, I think
it kind of cultivates that, yeah.
Right, and the headspace of people who live in Pasadena is different. And you're absolutely right. I mean, when I worked at the Los Angeles Times, a lot of people lived in Pasadena South and South Pasadena and Altadena because although it seems like you said you're living in East Jesus, you're really closer to downtown than most other parts of Los Angeles.
Yeah. I mean, I could take the metro to downtown in no time now. I don't even have to drive.
Yeah, people don't realize that we have rapid transit here. So
it exists. It doesn't get you very many places, but it gets to a few places.
When I read Colorado Boulevard, a number of things struck me. Three things right off the bat, and while they're not uniquely Southern Californian, they seem to be supersized. And those three were family and how family, extended and step, how the past can never ever be escaped, and obsession. So, in your story, which sort of holds all three of these in sort of this whirling mass. Which came first? You know, what was the driver? Was it the family, the dealing with the past, or the obsession of the characters?
Well, I had set up in the previous Crush books that his roommate and quasi brother Zerby, who was lives in the loft on MacArthur Park that Crush is. Crush stays in and is there under house arrest with an electronic anklet on his leg and he can never leave. You know, he can't leave. He's on a parole for insider trading. So he lives, you know, sort of vicariously through Crush. But I had set up that a long time ago in the past when, you know, Crush has a very rich and picaresque past. Crush's mother was married to Zerby's father for about a year, and during that time, Crush had lived in the mansion, and you know, because Zerby's father was a very rich man, and he lived in the mansion and gone to school with Zerby, and so this really was. I did want to examine that part of Crush's life and the part that sort of, you know, where he almost had a family, where he almost settled down and then it was taken away from him. And that was the main impulse behind it. And of course, I knew I wanted to set it in Pasadena, so I wanted to use the Rose Parade. I wanted to use the Devil's Gate Dam. I wanted to use all the landmarks of Pasadena. So I sort of made a roadmap of Pasadena and sort of came up with a story that tied it all together and kept it moving fast.
Well,
but I didn't really realize how much of the book was going to be set in the past. That was kind of a surprise to me, but I liked it. I liked exploring more about Crush and what makes him tick.
And of course, you've got the obsession, and what I think of as sort of this, Emile Zerbe's obsession with the trains. And
yes.
And we should also point out that although that his obsession of the trains is modern day, Henry Huntington also lived in Pasadena.
That's right. So the trains are part of Pasadena's heritage. And Emile Zerbe, Zerbe's father, wants to build the forever out of reach bullet train to San Francisco, because America doesn't have any bullet trains, although they have them in Europe and Japan and all that. And they're always trying to build one between L.A. to San Francisco that will go in, like, you know, an hour and really fast and take, you know. But it's just caught up in graft and people not wanting to spend the money, and people thinking they're spending too much money on this, that, and the other. So that and in doing research on that, I also knew I wanted to tie it even further to the past, to the Holocaust and the Nazis. I found a true link between that, believe it or not, between the bullet train in Southern California and the Holocaust, which was kind of horrifying when I found it, but I thought it worked so well in the story that I really snatched it up.
And then there's one more element that I think we should talk about that gets supersized in this part of the world, and that is crazy. And so you have this one part that I just was laughing out loud, because the books, the story is great, but the books are funny. And that was the support group at a church for targeted individuals. Please tell me this does not really exist. Please tell me this is a figment of your fertile imagination.
If you enter targeted individuals in the Google, you'll get 100 things like that, just like that. Now, they don't necessarily have support groups that meet in churches, but they are everywhere. I didn't make up any of that any of it. I mean, all of it is totally real. I mean, these are people who believe that in every conspiracy theory known to man. And they tie them all together in ways that make no sense. And they're sure that they are being, you know, zapped by radio waves into their brains, and they're being told to do things. And since the internet has come about, of course, it used to be that they were just crazy people who lived alone in houses and wore tinfoil hats. But now they can talk with each other, and so they can support each other, and they can verify each other. That's true. Yeah, well, you believe that the Jews are doing that. You believe that there are really lizard people running the world, and there are the UFOs are real, but they're not from outer space; they're from another dimension, and all just anything you name it, you find it there, and it always ends up being about the hollow earth theory and anti-Semitism. Always tend to go hand in hand with them. And it's just crazy. But the thing is, when you start reading them, their statements, they always sound kind of reasonable at the beginning, and then they get crazier and crazier and crazier and crazier.
We should mention that Crush's stepbrother, who lives with him under house arrest, has a twin, and we'll get into that more. And his twin considers himself a targeted individual and attends these meetings, which, as I said, it's just supersized. It's just so crazy.
Yes. And like a lot of people, he's a functioning crazy person. So he has a job and he functions, but he basically believes that there are people out to get him, that he's targeted, that the government is out to get him, that you name it, they're out to get him, and that everything is kind of tied in with H.P. Lovecraft and the Cthulhu mythos and all that sort of thing, and it just works in his mind like a great story that he's the center of. I think that that's a lot of it. It's sort of the to make people feel important because they're the center of something that nobody knows about but them. And then they find other people that know about it, and they feel connected to them. And it
just grows.
It's fascinating.
And we should mention that his job, that Noel is his name, Noel Zerbe's job, mm-hmm. is building floats for the Rose Parade.
Yes, designing floats for the Rose Parade. Yes, he designs the award-winning float for the Rose Parade. And he designs sets and for theater projects too, but that's his main thing. And it's all part of his craziness, you know. It works in some ways.
Well, I know that you're actually out of town, so I can report to you that KNX is doing its usual report from Irwindale every hour on the status of how the floats are being built.
People
who watch the parade should know that they really are built, sort of finalized and decorated in the last week of the year, and it's a 24/7 operation.
Yeah.
And on our local all news radio station, we get hourly updates.
Oh wow, that's great! Yeah, no, and of course Irwindale is also features in it where they build the floats and where they have those huge, massive divots in the ground where they had been taking soil out to build
gravel.
The freeways all around. Yeah, the gravel pit.
Yeah.
It's odd. You drive through it and it's like you're on the surface of the moon or something. There are these huge, huge gravel pits all around and you can't figure out where they came from. But that was where they dug out all the gravel that they used to build all the freeways in the whole LA area was in from Irwindale. And then they just left them there.
Yeah, it makes it a good-looking place.
Yeah.
So Caleb Rush, who's known as Crush, he's a bouncer. Uh-huh. He does a number of things, we shall say. But he's the ultimate tough guy. But he has a heart of gold, and I thought it in a very non-cliched way. But is that a difficult balance to pull off as you're taking him forward through the story without making him a total cliche, which he is not? So how do you form him in how does he talk to you? Does he hurt you?
Well, yeah, I originally started out by thinking, because I'd written a few books before with characters that were more like me, you know, more, you know, nerdy, thoughtful people who weren't very good at things. And so I thought, well, I'll write a character who's just the opposite of me, you know, who is, you know, doesn't talk much, is very physical, brave, you know, and so my initial thought was that just, you know, whatever I would do, he would do the opposite. You know, when I would run from something, he would run towards it. And it's gotten more complex than that. And I think he's become, you know, he's basically, a good person. And that is kind of an odd thing to write about. But, you know, he doesn't suffer fools gladly. But he's basically, you know, a good person who doesn't talk much, but who has a set of standards that he lives by and tries to live up to them.
He's a good person who will do bad things, and if you're a bad person, he will hurt you.
Yes. But he doesn't, you know, he doesn't ever use his violence, you know, just because he feels like it. You know, it has to be somebody who's doing something wrong. In his mind, he's done bad things in the past, and he's probably done more bad things than I've written about. But I like to think that he always did them for a reason.
And then you have another one of my own personal fascinations in the book. You have you have twins, Casey Zerbe that we already talked about, and Noel, who is the targeted individual who builds floats for the Rose Parade. And I, you know, one of them's very close to Crush, meaning he lives with him, and the other is completely different. And I always wonder this, you know, back to like Dickens and all these people that had twins as characters. You know, is it fun to write them? Was it fun to build them? And can you tell them apart when you're looking at them in your mind's eye?
I can tell them apart. And it's the fact that they look alike as, you know, functions in the story. But they're very different from each other. You know, I've known twins, and generally they're not, you know, the same person. I mean, when you get to know twins, you can tell them apart. You know, even if they look just the same, you can tell, oh, that's him coming in, or that's her coming in, because they carry themselves. They grow up to be very different people, and in this case, they grew up to be more different than most, I suppose. But it is interesting to think about, you know, the ways in which they are the same and different. Yeah.
And of course, it is integral to the story, which I don't want to give away any spoilers. But when Crush hears about what the story starts out with, the kidnapping of the Zerbe brother, who is under house arrest. And when Crush looks into it and talks to people, it all becomes clear to him, and then to the reader, and then it's like a Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. I mean, I thought just the to-ing and fro-ing was really entertaining, and I don't think you have to be from Southern California to have been entertained by this. It is. So crazy. You go out into the Lancaster Palmdale area and you really go to some of the more unique locations of this region, and they all tie into the story. And you know, as someone who knows them, I appreciate it. But I think if you didn't think Southern California was completely different before you read this book, you will after.
Oh, thank you. That's very good of you to say. I'm not from Southern California. I grew up in Virginia, but I've lived there for like, you know, over 30 years, and I always find it fascinating. And I love the LA area. I think it's just wonderful. I mean, it's a mix of everything. Just everything is there, and I think it gets kind of a bad rap in most works of fiction and movies, because they just focus on the rich people and the movie people, you know, and so much more to it than that. Yeah.
There's so much more crazy.
I just did the audiobook for my first novel, which is 50 Minutes to Live, which is also set in Glendale, and it's out on Audible. And it was very interesting to experience to do the audiobook, because I naturally assumed I read it, I narrated it, and I naturally assumed that, you know, when I was reading through it, that I could rewrite it, you know, because I wrote it 10 years ago and I could think of ways to improve it, you know, at least changing sentences and words around a little bit. But I had to say, no, you have to read it just absolutely the way it's written, for to work in whisper sync. And so it was very, very hard to do. And I realized then that I never really realized before that when you finish a novel, you should always read it out loud to somebody, if you can find anybody who'd be willing to put up with that. Because when you read it out loud, you can hear the, you know, the clunky phrasing or the good phrasing, I suppose, and you can kind of fix it and move through. So it was a very interesting experience for me.
And I have heard writers, one of them that comes to mind is Bonnie McBird about Sherlock Holmes. She's doing, I guess, pastiche, although I don't think that's a really good word for it, because her stories are really, I think they're spot on. And when I talked to her about her first one, actually, it was Les Klinger and I talked to her about it. She said that she would get up, you know, her background's in the theater, and she would get up and she would read the dialogue. So what you're saying makes sense, and I think it's something, it's a takeaway for anyone who's thinking of writing a novel.
It is a really good, and not just the dialogue, too, the prose also, all that stuff, you know, if it doesn't fall, you know, swimmingly off the tongue, you can improve it by listening to it. But the problem is, of course, who in the world would want to, hey, you want to sit down for 6 hours while I read my book to you? I don't know many people who'd be willing to do that. I have a new book coming out also in February.
Well, that's my next question, is what's next and for you, and then what's next for Crush? It's also our concluding question.
Right. Well, I have a new book coming out in February, not a non-Crush novel called From Away, that is not really a mystery, although there is a crime in it. It's sort of a supernatural story set in Maine that was a real labor of love for me. I worked on it for a long, long time, and I'm interested in seeing how that goes. I've a couple of ideas for new Crush novels, which I gotta get to when I have the time. I've been writing movies for Hallmark Mysteries and Movies Channel, Movies and Mystery Channel. So that's been taking up a little bit of my time lately, but I want to get back to writing the Crush books, because I'm a little bit behind on my deadline.
I want to thank you so much for joining us to talk about the Crush book and to tell us about From Away, which is coming in February, and wish you a very happy new year. And I know you'll be watching the Rose Parade, along with the rest of us.
I will. Yes. Yes. I'll be home by then. So I'll be watching that in Pasadena itself. Matter of fact, the night before the Rose Parade is the most exciting time, because all the floats come driving through the streets at night. And it's like you're watching a monster movie or something, as you see these big, gigantic floats come driving through the dark with no headlights and all. Very creepy.
Very cool. All right. Thanks again, Afif. Thank you for your time, really.
Well, thank you. It was fun, and hope people have a happy new year.